This is Tuvok. Mr. Neelix, in his own special way, has reminded me that I should let you know that you are listening to This Week in Geek with the Twig Crew exclusively here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Greetings, my fellow Starfleet officers. You're listening to Future Imperfect, brought to you by the good folks over at SFI.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club, and of course, people like OffWorldDesigns.com with the promo code BROHOOF, 10% off all those sweet t-shirts, and that works on international orders too, and all of our other good sponsors like GameAccess.ca, Big and Tallmart, blah, blah, blah. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd. I'm the captain of this vessel, if you will, and believe me, folks, we took a little bit of shore leave during the summer. In fact, as Steve Megatron Phillips told me, 6 weeks of it. Pretty much unheard of in Starfleet. Although, tonight's episode, I think you're really going to enjoy. But I'm not alone as I cruise through this mired conversation I think we're going to have tonight. I'd like to welcome my co-host,
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And Steve, tonight we're going to be celebrating and talking about Lieutenant Commander Data, as portrayed by Brent Spiner. And we're going to let the conversation evolve beyond the character of Data as portrayed on the movies and the television show. We're going to talk about the nature of artificial intelligence and artificial life, such as the Doctor from Star Trek Voyager. And you could even kind of maybe roll that into Deep Space Nine with the holodeck characters of Vic Fontaine, because I think he was pretty much sentient by the end of it. And it's interesting because you look at all the developments we have in technology in the last couple of years. Computers are getting smarter and smarter every day. Pretty much you walk in the Best Buy or Staples, the computer you buy is obsolete by the time you get up to the cash register. So it's an interesting time because they're talking about quantum computing and molecular hard drives and all sorts of technology that would have sounded insane 25 years ago when Star Trek The Next Generation first aired, and now science fiction is becoming science fact. So I think this is a good point to talk about Data, robotics, androids, what's the real difference sort of thing. But as we often do, we got a couple of things to get out of the way. We also have a L-Cars this week from Steve talking about the Soon-type androids, and I have a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 4 on Blu-ray, so let's hit that, and when we come back, we'll take a look at L-Cars, and then we'll get into our discussion of Data, artificial intelligence, and beyond. So we'll be right back, guys, right after my voice, again! We are boldly going where no one has gone before with Star Trek The Next Generation Season 4 on high-definition Blu-ray coming to us from Paramount. Season 4. This is a season I didn't quite expect to grab me the way it did. There's a number of really memorable episodes here, and dealing mostly with the theme of family. I mean, you get to see deeper interactions with Data, and specifically with Lore and Dr. Soon in the episode Brothers. And then even episodes that deal with the aftermath of the best of both worlds in the episode called Family, which deals with Captain Picard and his family and him, well, beating the crap out of his brother. But you also see things going on with Worf and a lot of other Enterprise crew members. And this is when the show started to get its own steady writing staff, and you get more of a serialized approach to things with continuing kind of plot lines and referencing past episodes. And I really think the writing really comes into its own this season with that, too. And a lot of the performances really improve, most notably, I think, with Brent Spiner, especially when you see him play three different characters in Dr. Soon, Data, Lore, and then him expanding upon that when he does the episode called In Theory, where he gets a girlfriend and trying to explore that side of not just human sexuality, but also human emotion and relationship, and having him simply deal with heartbreak as, I'll delete that subroutine now. And I really think that really says something about the credits of the show, the fact that it gets stronger and stronger every year. And this was the 100th episode year two, and that really says something in television, when you can get that far. Now, the thing that really kind of stands out to me in this particular release, special features, there's basically 2 hours of documentaries. You could even say 2.5, because there's the archival mission log, which kind of gives you the season 4 overview, and that's about 20 minutes, I think. And then there's one on disc 6, which is called In Conversation with the Art Department, which talks about a lot of things you might not expect. They even talk about things like some of the ship designs for Enterprise and how it relates to First Contact. Or they'll talk about the Promenade from Deep Space Nine and designing that. They talk about how they had to work with such a limited budget, though they were getting money. And it's a fascinating discussion. And it's done by the guy named Roger Lay Jr. And he has done the special features previously. And he gets a lot of really good conversation out of these people. There's even a 2-part doc which talks about basically looking at the series from the inside and then its kind of legacy afterwards and just looking at the different relationships there. And you get some really good conversation out of those. And I like how these documentaries all come together. They tell a story that never leaves you bored. You hear a lot of interesting things out of Rick Berman, him talking about, I think it was Berman or Brain. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head right now. That's going to bother me, talking about their experiences on Battlestar Galactica. But trust me when I say it, it's worth it. You also get the season gag reel. Not as funny as it has been in previous years. You actually get deleted scenes from certain episodes. And commentary on a couple of key episodes as well. So is it worth it? Absolutely. I mean, if you've come this far, you're so close to completing the set, you might as well go forward. Some strong episodes this season. Some of the best, I think. So go check out Star Trek The Next Generation Season 4 on High Definition Blu-ray.
And welcome back to Future Imperfect. Thanks, Mike, for that great review.
I gotta say, Paramount is putting more and more effort into these than a lot of other TV series that get ported over to DVD and Blu-ray. I'm particularly happy with the documentary, as I mentioned during my review, talking with the art department on TNG. Just funny how much involvement they really had in the show in terms of designing its aesthetic. And when you watch this, watch the documentary. It's called In Conversation with the Art Department. You'll find out an interesting story about Star Trek Enterprise and the design of the NX-1, and how it kind of connects to Star Trek First Contact, which I had no idea until they mentioned that. So it's kind of cool. Plus, there's a story about memos, which I rather enjoyed. So those special features are actually done by a guy I know named Roger Lay Jr., who's working on the new Captain Power series, Project Phoenix, if I'm not mistaken. So go check that out. Totally worth it. Looking forward to Season 5 whenever that drops. And next time we come back on the show, I'll be looking at Star Trek Enterprise Season 2, a series I'm not super familiar with, actually. So, but before we get into today's discussion of, like I said, artificial intelligence, data, and beyond, Steve has something very cool coming from the Library Computer Access System. This is LCARS.
This computer terminal provides full access to the LCARS computer net. It can be operated both by voice and keypad commands.
Initiating update.
Hello and welcome to another edition of LCARS. In this edition of Future Imperfect, we're talking about, well, data. So in getting into that, we're talking about the Soong-type androids or artificial intelligence. So a Soong-type android is a type of android first created by the cyberneticist Dr. Noonien Soong, who equipped these androids with sophisticated pinocytronic brains. And a total of 6 androids were known to have been created by Soong, although only the last 3 had fully functional positronic brains. The first 5 Soong-type androids were built as images of Dr. Soong, albeit with pale skin and yellow eyes. No other individual since has been able to replicate Soong's accomplishments, although Data came close with the creation of his daughter, Lal. Soong-type androids were capable of alcohol intoxication, yet components in their processing systems were susceptible to disruption by polywater. Now, naming the androids of the Soong-type you can get into as far as chronological order. There are two unnamed prototypes. You have B4, you have Lore, you have Data, you have Juliana Sum, and Lal. B4 is, of course, the most basic of the Sum-type androids, which you encounter in Star Trek Nemesis. Lore was the, albeit unstable, edition of the Sum-type robots. Data was pretty much the peak of the Sum-type robots, with his many adaptive abilities and growth throughout the series and the films. The only other one that was actually truly almost human-like in android style was Juliana Sum, who Noonien Sum managed to make her believe that she was always human, despite the fact that she wasn't anymore. So, yes. Honestly, this has been one of the greatest accomplishments that no one has ever been able to replicate in the entire Trek universe. And I think that the Sum-type robots are not only great as far as the technology is concerned and the possible future of robotics that we strive for today, but it also gives hope that they may become equals in the sense of Data, not Lore. So this wraps up another edition of Elkar, so now back to the show.
Please confirm deactivation request. Deactivation complete. Now disconnected from this terminal.
Thank you, Steve, once again, for compiling those. I always like listening to those because I always learn something a little bit new that either I missed in research, it refreshes my memory, or I just plain missed. So thank you once again.
No problem.
All right, so tonight's discussion, like I said, we're going to talk about looking at Data and him not just as a character, but also as a concept. One of the things I like to consider myself, Steve, just to kind of give you an idea where I want to take this discussion, I consider myself a futurist. I very much look forward to the future of mankind, what it means in terms of where technology is going to take us. I play a lot of video games like, say, Mass Effect, and one of the central themes in that game is synthetic life and organic life. And mild spoilers here for Mass Effect. There's talk in one of the Mass Effect 3 endings about synthetic life and artificial life creating this sort of synthesis between each other. And I look at Data in particular, and I kind of see this as kind of a precursor. While he doesn't have while he does not have any real flesh and blood components, it could be argued this character, this creation of Dr. Sum, has a soul, and in the episode Measure of a Man in the second season, they argue Data's sentient rights as a person, and this is expanded upon even further in Star Trek Voyager when they start talking about the Doctor as a photonic being. Does he have rights? And we see this throughout the series. I mean, the Enterprise's computer decides to rebel at one point because Data programs it with Professor Moriarty. So I think the idea of artificial intelligence, true intelligence, I don't think is actually that far out there. I mean, for example, call me alarmist, but Steve, let's look at Google, for example. That's more or less the internet, right?
Yeah.
That's the sum of human knowledge, intelligence, experience, and it's not just peppered with facts from Wikipedia or WikiLeaks or all the news sources and even social media like Twitter, Facebook, and even to an extent MySpace. You look at all that interaction, all that data, all that information, and when you look at people like you and I, when we post on Twitter, we're giving our thoughts and our human context to things. I would almost look at it as eventually I could almost see an intelligence rising from that, because we're feeding this digital primordial soup, and you know, sometimes programs behave ways they're not supposed to. Like they talk about there's bugs in program and the programmers have to figure out, like, I don't know why it's happening. And you know, I wonder if at some point we're going to run into that Terminator or Matrix future where the machines literally say, I think, therefore I am. And I'm not saying rise up and kill us all, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. And there was actually a study, and there's a group talking about this. I really want to say they're American or Swedish. I remember hearing about this on a news talk station a couple of months ago, where they're talking about seriously looking at the fact of artificial intelligence as a potential threat to mankind. And it's not just from fiction, like I said, like The Terminator or The Matrix, but it's a possibility. And I like to think, when you look at episodes like Measure of a Man, let's say we do create artificial intelligence like Data, where do we go from here? So I guess now that I've given you all these deep philosophical thoughts, what's your opening statement on this, Steve, now that I've said a whole mouthful?
Honestly, I'm kind of a futurist too, to some extent. There's some things that I do think is possible, and other things that I don't think is possible. Like a lot of the technology in Star Trek is possible. I mean, if you look at it, you have, you know, cell phones, you have some small basis of artificial intelligence in the sense of like the Siri and the iPhone, being able to figure out what you want based on what you asked. Mm-hmm. Or be able to search it out for you, kind of like the Starship Enterprise computer. Mm-hmm. So I mean that kind of AI exists today. I mean, there's also, I do think that eventually robotic artificial intelligence will be something that will come up, even possibly in the near future. Because if you look at it, there's already human-styled android robots being built mostly over in the other side of the planet, but and they're very lifelike. I mean, there's even some that are doing things that shouldn't be done with robots, but I do see it happening eventually, and I don't think we're that far off. To some degree, it kind of scares me, but that's more so because it's out of not understanding fully.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at characters like Data that kind of give you this childlike intelligence, and I'm not saying Data's an idiot, but he has that very naive sense of understanding people. He's sort of, I guess he's supposed to be the Mr. Spock of TNG. What do you think appeals people to this character, other than the fact that he's a robot or he's an android and he's cool?
Honestly, I think it's kind of the fact that he learns and grows as the show progresses. If anyone on that series has changed the most, I would argue that it would be Data.
Yeah, because he, when I was watching season 4 in particular, I noticed, I think he gets a lot more personal development than a lot of people give him credit for. He has a girlfriend, albeit very short-lived, and Ensign Jenna, can't remember her last name. He meets his father. He has another fight with Lore. And, you know, he's so close to getting the emotion chip, but gets screwed out of it at, like, the last minute. And he goes to people for advice in this. And I think the programming that he has given to him by Dr. Soong, I guess it's a learning computer. It's constantly growing and expanding every episode with every conversation.
And I guess that because Data, he wanted to be the most human like as far as like his androids are concerned, he built him so that he was breathing, had a pulse, he had the ability to dream, to feel. I mean, he was pretty much, other than the fact that he didn't know how to cope with emotion to begin with, he pretty much was as much human as we are today.
I mean, he kind of reminds me, and I hope I don't offend anybody by saying this, reminds me of people with Asperger's syndrome that are very socially awkward, and Data's still trying to maneuver that minefield of social interaction, because he doesn't have the emotions or doesn't necessarily understand what he's feeling. I think he understands human nuance. He gets that. I mean, he makes observational humor, though maybe not necessarily on purpose all the time, but he has subroutines and programs within him which emulate the behavior of us. And it's fascinating just to watch him interact with people. When I was watching, once again, the episode where he tries to get a girlfriend, and he's asking people for advice, just one of the things that, I've picked up on when he's talking to her, he says, less than 1% of the ship knows about our relationship. And he's talking about the people he went to for advice, such as Riker and Geordi, etc. And I have a friend of mine who has kind of done the same thing to me. Whenever he runs into a problem with a girl, he'll come to me for advice because he doesn't necessarily get the social interactions. Like, what do I do now? And I find that very fascinating. I like the fact that the show even kind of went there. The fact that, you know, falling in love with a machine, so to speak. And I think that's relevant now, more so than it ever has been in the past. Because you look at, say, online dating, for example. And it's much more, it's better now that we have things like Skype and Facebook and, you know, even, what's that app on the iPhone, where you can see each other? FaceTime. Yeah, so you have the true video phone, but back in my day, Christ, I sound old, you were talking over MSN, or if you remember, ICQ and Trillion, and you were and you were talking with text. So you had no idea whether that was a man, a woman, or it could have been a really intelligent program talking back at you. And I'm pretty sure I've read short stories about, you know, computers falling in love with people and vice versa, not knowing that, oh, that's a machine on the other end of that. And I don't know, there's just something about that particular episode I really, really, really liked. And there's something about Data that I really connect with, and the fact that he's trying to understand his humanity, because I believe he does have it. And when they talk about Measure of a Man, Picard makes the argument, does this machine have a soul? Or I think it was the woman who says that that's something we can't prove in this courtroom today, or something along those lines. I find that personal journey very relevant to me, for example, because when I was younger, I was very in touch with who I was, very much sort of cry at the drop of a hat. And then at one point in my life, I very much changed. And my friend Pierce said it best, the Terminator doesn't cry. And even in Terminator 2, when Arnie's character is about to die, he says to John Connor, I now know why you cry. It's something I can never do. And I kind of look at Data, and I think in some ways he gets that about people. And that's kind of the way I'm almost seeing people again. I mean, I understand people now, but sometimes I don't understand why they do what they do. And I see parallels between myself and Data in that thing, although I'm not as emotionally retarded, if you pardon the expression. I know we're going to get letters for that one. So feedback at thisweekingeek.net if you think I'm offensive. And I don't know, there's just something about Data that's always really kind of attracted me more to the show than any other character on there. And I think Brent Spiner, outside of Patrick Stewart, gave some of the most powerful performances on that show.
Oh, I have to agree. I mean, also, think of it this way. Brent Spiner managed to play five different versions of between Data and the Soong family line between various Star Trek series. He played the one version of Soong that was evil, that was in Enterprise, and then he was the Noonien Soong that was in TNG. He also played Lore and B4 and Data. I mean, but each one of them had different dynamics of, especially the three androids, for looking the same, had completely different personalities.
Yeah, and that's really a credit to Spiner's acting ability. Just the fact that he was able to pull that off. There's actually something they mention in the special features that in the episode Brothers, originally they were going to have someone else play Dr. Soong. And Spiner said, I think it was Rick Berman at the time, I think it was like one of the last episodes he directed or wrote or something like that, that, hey, why don't I play this? And he's like, oh god, what have I gotten myself into? And you realize this guy's got a real range to his abilities. And I think of all the people on the show, maybe outside of Frakes, he has the most fun. Because he gets a chance to play with it. And in all the blooper reels, you see he's usually the one cracking jokes or doing something funny. In fact, if you remember, do you remember in the episode Brothers where he does an imitation of Picard's voice to lock out the computer?
Yeah.
That's not dubbed. That's actually Spiner doing that.
Well, I've actually heard him. There was, I've seen it in a video too. There was, it was a fan convention and Patrick Stewart was on stage and he was talking. And then Brent Spiner started talking from the crowd as Picard before he walked up on stage.
Oh, I remember that now.
And I thought that was quite hilarious because he sounded just like him.
Yeah, and like, that's something kind of, that's something that I really appreciate about Spiner, is he's got that really weird sense of humor. Any interviews that he does, there's always a weird kind of smile to him. And, I don't know, there's just something that I really think Spiner brought to this character that I don't think anybody else possibly could have. I mean, in terms of Data. And like you said, he got the most development of any of the characters really over the series. You really got a chance to really know him. I mean, obviously being a fan favorite. And in fact, I don't know if this is an appropriate point to tell this story, but I found this out and I couldn't believe it. Have you ever heard of the woman who's obsessed with Brent Spiner and is named Gale?
No.
Okay, I'm going to give you the short version because the real version is so weird, you wouldn't believe it. Okay, so there's this woman named Gale who believes she is married to Brent Spiner mentally. They have mental sex every night with Vladimir Putin. And she believes every single word that she says. This woman is obsessed with Brent because he wrote to her once back in the 90s, I think. And, yeah, oh my god, it's so weird. Type in Gale Brent Spiner in the Google and go look her up on YouTube. And all she does is yell about how people are... Oh, and she allowed Matthew McConaughey to marry someone... And Hugh, oh, this is great. Hugh Jackman and his robot friend rescued her from an Australian prison. I wish I was making this up.
Somebody needs to be locked up in a psych ward.
No, they need to be given a webcam and 24/7 access. This is great. But yeah, she was this obsessed fan with Brent Spiner, and I just got to thinking, man, you attract the weirdos, don't you? But that aside, I'm trying to think what else I'd like to add about Data before I kind of want to... I'm not quite sure where I want to steer the conversation, because this opens up a whole new kettle of fish, I think. When there's one episode where Data creates his own daughter, Lol, and that's in the third season, I think. And Lol dies. But he transfers her memories into her, into him. So in essence, she lives on. I don't know. There's something about artificial life and digital transference of memories that I find remarkably fascinating. Because one of the things, and just to get kind of serious for just a moment, I am not afraid of death. I'm afraid of the loss of consciousness. And what I mean by that is, I fear the ability to acknowledge my own death. Do you kind of get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, I just don't want the light switch to be, and that's it. And you look at a character like Data, he has that too, because he's said, I'm afraid of someone discovering my switch and just turning me off. And Riker does that in, once again, Measure of a Man, where he says, and like this, Pinocchio's strings are cut. And I think that's really, I don't know, when you look at the evolution of artificial intelligence and even digital life, that's kind of terrifying when you think about it.
Yeah.
Good response, Steve.
Yes.
No, I mean,
I completely agree with that. I myself am more wondering of, you know, will there be some kind of a artificial positronic kind of brain to transfer memories to, so that, you know, you could live on in some degree instead of, like you said, having the light shut off. I don't look forward to that day where the light shut off. I know the body will wither and die. I wish there was another alternative, kind of like Data.
Yeah, and it's because one of the things that's really popular in science fiction, and I think this was by William Gibson in Neuromancer, there's something called a brain tape, and they can have an aspect of you live on as an interactive program. And when I look at the ability to maybe, could you ever copy the human brain to upload to a computer to exist as something else? This is a conversation I had on my way to PAX a couple of years ago. Is the future of humanity more digital than opposed to physical? And we're becoming closer to cyborgs every day. I don't know. I mean, one of the things that I think kind of makes this possible, and I'm not sure whether this argument is going to make a whole lot of sense, look at the transporter, for example. In my mind, that's high-tech murder. Because you're essentially destroying one thing to create it in another place. Does the consciousness transfer? So in theory, when you're transported, could you not copy that pattern into something else?
Well, if you want to talk transporters too, you could also be killing the previous version, and out comes the clone artificial copy of the first copy that was destroyed.
And that always, that never bothered me till I can't remember where the hell I first heard that, but I was like, that's utterly friggin' terrifying when you really kind of break it down. Yet with Data, it would always be constant, wouldn't it? Actually, yeah. I mean, because his program could be backed up on the Enterprise. The second he gets back on, just uploads it again.
Yeah, just plug him back in. Boom, done.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's one continuous experience. And that's, I'm envious of that, in a way. Just the fact that Data, in theory, could exist as raw data and live. Wow, that's a pun I never thought I'd make. He would, in theory, live forever in that state. And there's the fact that Data was willing to create new life for himself, too, in creating other people. I have a feeling they're saying something deeper with that, if you follow my life. When artificial life creates life, and the fact that that life felt something. I mean, Lol says to Data, I love you, at one point, and Data surpassed his own programming, so to speak. The fact that he was able to give her that emotion. And I don't know, I think there's something in here that I want to connect. I think I lack the vocabulary to do so. But I think it says something. I really do. About when you look at a character like Data, a man created that. That creation then created life. Is that not some kind of an evolution?
I would say so.
And I wonder if we'll ever truly accomplish something like that, because I'd like to think we would, and I'm not saying the concept of a soul can be created, but in my opinion, I think Data does have a soul. He doesn't have to have a heart to have that. It's not defined by biologics. And you could even bring in I guess that's what we're doing here. We're bringing in the metaphysical to it. And with artificial intelligence, once again, looking at characters like Data and the Doctor, think about who gives you the most human stories in Star Trek. It's these emotionless, created characters. I mean, for example, seeing the Doctor try to delete a painful memory when his artificial family dies. With Data having to watch Lol die, feeling her die, because he's got memories of her death inside of him, not being able to comprehend that. And I guess I'm reading really far into the fiction here, But think about it. When he gets his emotion chip for the first time, think about every decision that now has emotional context to it.
Well, there's now a equal and opposite kind of reaction to everything. I mean, there's consequences to every decision he makes now because he has that extra added element to his intelligence, which is the emotion.
And it's really weird because, just looking at something like that, I mean, it's almost envious to not have emotion because your decisions can be based upon logic and strategy and basically, it breaks down to the universal language of math. And, you know, just knowing this is right based upon this. However, having emotion gives you that instinct, gives you that gut feeling. And yet, there are times in the show, it may be just a slip in the performance or maybe even in the writing, or maybe it was intended to be that way because Soong wrote it into Data. It's almost like he goes with a gut feeling, like what the fact when they thought Geordi and Ro Laren were dead, Data didn't give up. Like, he knew, and then he asked Worf, for example, hey, what should we do to celebrate the fact that, you know, they're dead? And they threw a party. So, I think there's something to be said for this character. And, you know, this conversation went a lot differently than I had envisioned it. Rather than talking about Data's exploits and what he's accomplished, you know, being assimilated by the Borg and all this shit, I found it more interesting to talk about what he was than what he's done, if that makes more sense for the context of this conversation. And I really wanted to draw attention to the fact that I think Star Trek is really predicting the future in the fact, like I said, one day we're going to have a conversation, like in Measure of a Man, where we're going to have to ask ourselves, the things that we create, do they have rights? And you look at all the robotic factories now, we look at all the space probes that are going out there. I mean, even the ones on Mars has a very sophisticated computer suite. Stuff like that. And eventually these things are going to get to the point where they can make decisions. I think there was a TED Talk I watched last year where they want to send a probe to Europa to dig through the ice to go underneath it to look for stuff. This thing has to be able to make decisions. And making a decision is a very important part of life, in my opinion. It's the ability to have a choice. And whether you could argue a cat makes a choice or is relying on instinct, I don't know. I mean, we can already make robots that are as intelligent as cockroaches, et cetera, just reacting to external stimuli. But I think, honestly, at some point, we are going to be able to create something as smart as a Data. And I honestly think at some point, something like a Data will be able to create something else. And there's a thing in Mass Effect where they say the created will always rebel against their creator. Yet, when Data was rescued by Starfleet, he chose to be thankful and made the decision to go to Starfleet Academy to repay them to be an explorer and a scientist, whereas Lore was a fucking nut, for lack of a better phrase. He was very maniacal and very evil. But even he says, he's like, brother, one day you'll understand why I do the things that I do. And maybe in some ways Lore was more human, but maybe just had more flaws than Data emotionally. Maybe he's a misunderstood villain. Although he does try to get the Borg to end all organic, so I guess that kind of throws that argument out the window. But hey, people thought Hitler had good intentions at first, too. So I guess that kind of lays out my argument here. So I don't know, Steve, do you think we've really kind of left anything out, I mean, in terms of the philosophical questions about Data?
Well, I mean, he also was one of those interesting life forms that seemed to be intrigued by using things from the holodeck. And when I get to that, I mean, he enjoyed playing characters that challenged his intelligence, such as Sherlock Holmes against Moriarty and being in the Dixon Hill series with Picard and playing poker with like Hawking, Einstein, and Newton.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they also kind of wrapped him up and gave him his ultimate humanity by the time Nemesis came around. Despite how bad the film actually is, it kind of sets the tone for Data in that, because he once again finds another long-lost brother, but is like one of the early prototypes. Mm-hmm. And he tries to help bring him up to his level and by copying everything he knows into him. And before the end, he saves his kind of surrogate father of Picard, knowing that he's going to die and sacrificing himself for everyone else. And so he creates this illusion of the ultimate piece of humanity, which is death.
But then he kind of negates that by uploading his memories to B4.
Technically, it insinuates that he comes back, like he's reincarnated, but technically not, because B4 is so low-level positronic brain that it would take literally forever to fully imprint. Although in the expanded universe, as far as like the comics,
which is supposed to be fixing him. Which is supposed to be canon for the Star Trek Online game, which is supposed to be established canon. That's what they tell us, because it ties into Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams verse. So it's all very convoluted, honestly. But yeah, and in a way, I think him transferring his soul, if you want to call it that, to B4 is maybe the ultimate act of humanity. Follow my line here. He's afraid of death. What defines anything more than a fear of death? I mean, really think about that. Is Data... I don't know. I really think it's... Maybe the act of self-sacrifice is, once again, one of the greatest things a person or anything can really do. But the fact that Data... He kind of cheated. He gets to come back. Now...
He kind of, in a sense, did what Spock did with McCoy.
Yeah, yeah. I was just about to say, yeah. Wow, I never even thought of it like that. Man, talk about all these reincarnated people. But it's. Although I can kind of recant on my previous argument, he wouldn't have the same memories up until the moment of death. He would be missing that 15, 20 minutes. Or in essence, he'd be missing... He'd be
missing about a day.
Yeah, or potentially more. Let's say B4's personality asserts itself until the emotion chip is installed. So he could be missing like a year or more until he wakes up as Data, so to speak, because he would have been coming back at the moment just before he beamed out. So
true.
That's very... It'll bake your noodle when you really think about it. So, yeah, I mean, there's our discussion on Data. Take from this what you will. Whether it's artificial life becoming more, is this what we're destined to become? Are we all the same? Is it positronic versus a meat brain? Or is it just the fact, do our souls define us as opposed to what we're actually made out of? So next time on Future Imperfect, I promise you it won't be another 6 weeks. Probably towards the end of the month of September. Now, hopefully you guys have been checking out our series of Star Trek Renegades interviews. It ends tomorrow on September 12th. So hopefully these guys have got an amazing amount of funding. And I know they're shooting no matter what, starting in just a couple of weeks, actually. I think something like 2 weeks or less, I think. Something like that. Really soon, anyway. To get the show on the road here. And we should see that in early 2014. We've already talked to some really fantastic people, so hopefully you'll go back and check that out on last week's Star Trek week. So this was kind of a bookend to that, because I've rediscovered my inner Trekkie over these past couple of weeks talking with these people, and you know, just pushing the show off with Steve during quote-unquote shore leave was a chance for me to kind of recharge the Star Trek batteries, because it's hard to come back every week to talk Trek. You have to really be into it. And that kind of brings us to our next show we're going to talk about. We're going to look at the Star Trek pilots. We're going to look at all of them, from the original series all the way up to Enterprise. Which had the best, which had the worst, and why? And then following that, we're going to look at the finales for every series. Which one was the worst, which one was the best? And I think there's an unexpected winner, in my opinion, here. So hopefully we'll be joined by Leo, that sci-fi guy, or maybe some other people we can drag into this discussion. So once again, for Future Imperfect, brought to you by SFI.org, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club, and people like offworlddesigns.com, where you get some awesome discounts using the promo code BROHOOF. It's totally worth your time. So anyway, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with...
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And until next time, my friends, live long and prosper.